morning. I'm calling the Senate Education Committee to order at 8:03. Today is Thursday, March 23rd, 2017. This morning we have present Senator Coghill, Senator Giesel, and Senator Begich, and myself, Chair Hughes. Senator Stevens is excused. Please remember your cell phone etiquette. And thank you to those assisting us today. We always appreciate you. Today we are going to continue our hearing on Senate Bill 96, the Education Schools Teachers Funding Bill, by the Senate Education Committee. And we heard this go yesterday, and when Joshua Banks overviewed the bill, he noted changes that would be coming. So today we'll focus our discussion on the committee substitute that was distributed to members yesterday and the changes that have been made from the bill. And as we all know, this is a process, and I know there will be additional changes that will come, and we'll discuss some of the issues that have been brought to our attention and the changes that will need to be made. So I'll welcome input from committee members as part of this process. And Joshua, if you want to come up and get ready, and Senator Coghill, I'd entertain a motion to adopt the CS. This time.
Madam Chair, this is the end version. I move that the Senate Education Committee adopt the end version for Senate Bill 96. It's WO30-LS0452/N as the working document for the committee.
And I will object for purposes of discussion. So, Joshua, if you introduce yourself and go through the changes in the CS for us, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Joshua Banks, staff to Senator Hughes. And I will be going over the changes in version N of Senate Bill 96. To start off on page 3, as mentioned yesterday, in section 5, there's two changes that were made. On lines 9 and 10, we're adding that a requirement that districts have to post this report on their website or a community website, or for smaller districts, if they don't have a website, then any other easily accessible
method. Could I interrupt for a second?
Yes.
I do not have the version in front of me. I thought I did, but do we have an extra copy here?
The copy of the CS.
Madam Chair, I'm in the same boat. Okay. For some reason, I don't have it.
Yeah, we'll take a brief at ease. On the record, and everyone has what they need, the CS in front of them. So I will mention, too, just before Joshua starts in again, that we do have Susan McCulley with the Department of Education, And then Pamela Leary, the director of the Treasury Division, online as well. So in case we have questions. So go ahead, Joshua.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, for the record, Joshua Banks, staff, Senator Hughes. So on page 3 in section 5, there are two changes made there. The first one, again, was requiring the school districts to post this report either on their website or the community's website or some other easily accessible method.
Joshua, could you mention what some of those other easily accessible methods might be? Just
Some thoughts that we had were a community center, a post office, building that is commonly used in the community.
So on a bulletin board or perhaps in a school newsletter, so the community has the information. Thank you.
And on lines 20 through 24, we're adding two more requirements to this report so that the district will need to show the total number of administrative employees compared to the number of total number of teachers, as well as a ratio of teachers to the number of students in the district. Moving on to page 6 in section 11, lines 9 and 10, we're adding a sentence that requires that the average daily membership of a school described in this section is equal to the student count for the school. And this was to reduce the immediate negative impact of section 11, the unintended consequence, in that the way it was originally worded would make it so that if a school did not qualify for the school size adjustment, they'd essentially be kicked out of the formula and have no funding. And so that was a large error on our part, and so that sentence should correct the issue. And again, speaking with the department, there may be an additional adjustment we can make to that to make it absolutely clear that we don't want schools to be kicked out of the formula in this change. And we've also spoken, as mentioned yesterday, that there may be some additional changes made to this section so that there's not as many schools that would be affected by this. At this point, there may be quite a few schools that would be impacted by this, and so we wouldn't want to put districts in a hard position, as well as Senator Begich mentioned yesterday, a phase-in of if there is large reductions in a particular school. As an additional change that we're looking at making is possibly defining road so that we're not a trail is not considered a road, and if two communities are 25 miles apart by a trail, then that wouldn't be included.
Would not be included.
Correct.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Senator Begich.
Yeah, and Joshua, I had another question, too, and that was yesterday related to if you have two schools, both of them at 75%, wouldn't the implication be that you'd end up with one overcrowded school in this situation, potentially? I mean, I wanted to also avoid overcrowding schools.
Through the chair, Senator Bates, that is an additional point we're looking at to the intent. By putting in one school within 25 miles of another school, that would lead to the possible interpretation of that to merge two schools and have them be overcrowded. So we would be looking at making a change so that our intent would not be two schools merging to be 150% capacity.
Right. Thank you very much.
But rather, there'd be four schools at 75% capacity that become three schools.
At 100%.
Mm-hmm. And moving on to the next page in section 13, this is lines 1 through 4. There's a sentence added here that regulations adopted under this section will not go into effect for at least a year after the state school board adopts the regulations. If the minimum score for the praxis exam is increased. And Senator Bayes mentioned yesterday that if there would be a necessary grandfathering in so that current teachers would not be affected by this. And looking at this section yesterday afternoon, we believe that this is for initial certification. So our understanding may not be that teachers that currently are certified would be affected by this. But, Madam Chair, I believe Dr. McCauley might be able to answer, at least speak to this question, if that would be permissible.
Yes, and you know, sometimes we go, I just want to mention, sometimes we'll go have staff just go through all the changes, but I think we don't have that many, and it's better to discuss them as we go. So Dr. McCauley, did you hear that comment, and can you give us some insight on whether teachers who are already certified would be impacted if Praxis scores in some subject areas were raised?
Mm-hmm. Yes. For the record, Susan McCauley, Education Policy Coordinator for the department. Can you hear me okay before I continue?
We can hear you. You're coming in loud
okay,
and clear.
Great. So I don't believe that the language precludes excluding from this requirement already certificated teachers, meaning that I believe that it's correct that this would apply to initial certification. I don't believe that the language precludes our clarifying in regulation that it applies to initial certification. I want to double check that for sure with other staff in the department, but I think there's sufficient room for us to make clear in regulation what was just stated on the record as the intent, and the intent is that it would apply to, that the increased Praxis scores would apply to initial certification.
Thank you, Dr. McCauley. Continue, Joshua.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Joshua Banks for the record. And moving on to page 9 in line 7, this is the Virtual Education Consortium section. Again, in subsection F, we're changing it so that a school district that participates in the consortium will have to pay a fee. The original bill, as mentioned yesterday, stated that if the district submits a class through a course through the consortium, this would be so that if there are districts that just have students taking courses through the consortium, they'll still pay a fee to cover the operating costs.
Chair.
Senator Coghill.
Just to ask a question on that. There's a cost associated with both the provider and the receiver of the education. So is that factored in? Do you think that would be factored in, for example, if you have one school supplying education, but the setup for that is somewhat costly and another one? I'm wondering if there's a consortium has like an entrance fee. That's probably a dumb question, but I just need to know
There are no dumb questions, Senator Coghill. It always opens up. There are probably people in the room with the same thing in their mind. Joshua, do you want to speak to that?
And through the chair, Senator Coghill, if I understand your question correctly, there's an entrance fee to the consortium. Is that what your question? Is there an entrance fee?
Yeah. It looks like the fee, Madam Chair, is for those who will be taking students actively into a program within a consortium. I understand that part, but it's also true that a school in its own hardware would have to maybe make some accommodation that would be costly. And I was just wondering how that's going to be factored in.
I'm going to talk about the fee per student. That might.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, Senator Coghill. In subsection E of the section, there is a set fee for if, say, the Anchorage School District is offering biology virtually and a student in TOC wanted to take that class, then the Alaska Gateway School District would pay a portion of that student's BSA to the Anchorage School District. And so our intent would be that would cover the costs of Anchorage, the cost of that course.
It might not cover it, but go towards it. Yes, Senator Begich.
And maybe to help clarify, Senator Coghill, on page 9, section F, does talk about a fee to be in the consortium, which was that
yes.
have a question. It says a school district that participates in the consortium shall pay a fee to the consortium to cover its administrative costs. So there is some fee. It would probably be set by will be set by the department in a regulation.
I believe that his concern is that the district offering the courses has higher expenses than the district taking the courses. So that's where the student fee would help offset some of those costs. Do you have further, Senator Coghill?
I think both of them have to be factored in, and I was just trying to get my head around it, that's all. I'm probably not as well-versed as many of you are on this, so I'm working on my way into it.
Senator Geisel, you had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It looks like this is described at the top of page 9, lines 1 through 6, where it talks about the base student allocation. You create a formula here for essentially what is tuition. You're calling it a fee in line 1 to the host district, but it's frankly tuition for the course that the host school district is offering. And I see that you have an equation here. It looks like multiplying the base student allocation by a fraction based on the number of courses the student is taking. Is that correct? Through the chair to yourself?
Yes, Joshua, you want to give an example, and you are correct, Senator Geisel. Just give an example of how it might work.
Yeah, through the chair, Senator Geisel. Thank you. I should have clarified which lines and which page I was meaning when I was answering Senator Coghill's question. And again, give the example of a student in TOC taking a class virtually through the Anchorage School District. If the way that this formula is working is if the student in TOC is taking 7 classes, a high school student taking 7 classes, 1/7 of the BSA for that student will go to the Anchorage School District. And so that's the set fee in this section. Does that answer your question,
Senator Geisel?
Thank you. And of course, if the person were taking 4 classes, 4/7. Just trying to make it a little bit more functional. I mean, I've taken distance courses also and paid tuition to other universities, so it's pretty common. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, continue, Joshua.
And thank you, Madam Chair. Staying on the topic of fees from paid to the host district, a change that we mentioned yesterday was that if the host school district chooses not to accept a fee, then we would make it so that it is optional, or if they want to reduce the fee so it's only half of what is set here, we would make a change so that's an option.
Madam Chair?
Senator Begich.
Just some suggested language in that regard could be something to the effect of, notwithstanding any other subsections, a district may set a fee at or below, so that gives you the option, so they could set it within a range.
Yes.
Thank you for that. Joshua?
And the next change in the CS is in section 13. I'm sorry, page 13. In sections 20 and 21 are new sections to the bill. And this is relating to the public school trust fund. Section 20 is a new section to the bill, but that in the original bill that section was repealed, and the reason why we wanted to not repeal that section was so that it was clear what the public school trust fund would go towards. And so there were a couple technical amendments that legislative legal needed to make to this, as well as make it clear that the administrative costs of the fund would be a allowable expenditure from the fund. So that's why that section is in there, section 20. Section 21 makes it so that the legislature may not appropriate more than 4.75% of the market value of the fund, the 3-year average market value of the fund. And the second sentence states that the amount appropriated may not exceed the amount of income the fund earned in the previous fiscal year. And speaking with the Department of Revenue yesterday afternoon, we realized that if the fund had a net loss, then that would essentially make it so the legislature cannot appropriate anything from the fund. And so that would likely be a change that we would need to make. And if I know that PM Lear is on the line if there's questions regarding that or anything else with the school trust fund.
Pamela Leary, would you like to speak to that, or are you online? Can you hear me?
I can hear you. For the record, Pam Leary, Director of Treasury Division. I just happened to read the CS, and I called Joshua yesterday because I wanted to understand the intent of the language, and it sounds like the language as it is written would, in a year of a potential loss, mean that there was no money going into, coming out of the public school trust fund towards education. And so I inquired whether that was the intent, and it does not seem to be. So that's why I'm on the line, to talk about that and answer any questions.
And I do have a question. So if it was in a year of loss, and you did the 4.75 3-year average draw, are we cutting into the principal of the fund? Because my understanding is constitutionally we cannot cut into the principal of the fund. So would we be running into that?
Through the chair, the 4.75% is on the total market value.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was a year of a loss, it would be combined with the two prior years. So there would have to be an analysis done. There could be language if you wanted to limit it to the amount of the principal. I believe something could be drawn up. But in general, it's the total value, and we'd have to do an analysis on what the principal value was to determine whether there might be any amount going into that. But when you have losses, your total market value is decreasing, so the 4.75% is going to be on a lower number.
Right, and so potentially if you had, say you even had 3 years in a row of potential loss, I think putting some kind of protection for the principal might make sense and just make it clear. Senator Begich, did you have?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And the present formula, because all this is trying to do is just be a little bit more aggressive with the earnings of the fund as it is now. If there's a loss now and the public school trust fund doesn't make money, no expenditure comes from the public school trust fund, right?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, that's not necessarily correct, because the way it is structured now, only realized income, so dividends and interest, get moved into the income fund. They're two separate funds, and the amount that comes out to pay towards education comes from the income fund, so it's only realized earnings. So there would be just that amount that moves in, so the losses would not carry over.
Senator Begich?
Is it conceivable, maybe for ease of understanding, to do a hypothetical look back if this had been in place for, say, the last 10 years or 15 years, covering even the time of loss? What might have been the impact? That way we could actually know what the impact would be.
That's an excellent idea. Pamela, is that something you can prepare for us?
It most certainly is. I'd be happy to do so.
Pamela, I'd like to ask you also, how much is in that fund right now, and how much would we be drawing this year as opposed to if this language were to go in effect? Do you know what the difference would be?
I do, in fact. The public school trust fund, just bear with me for a second to get my notes. I think I had prepared a preliminary fiscal note just to calculate that amount in case the question was asked, and I believe it was approximately $26 million. And let me just find that information. It was approximately $27.4 million for 2016. So looking back through 2016, 2015, and 2014, the 3-year monthly average market value, 4.75% would have yielded an appropriation of up to $27.4 million.
And what was the amount without the calculation that we actually did draw?
For 2016, I believe the appropriation was $13 million.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. Senator Begich.
Madam Chair, if I heard correctly, that means that under the calculation, that's an increase, that's almost doubling the availability. It's an increase of another, you know, I think she said $13 million and $27 million, it's $14 million, so over double. So it's interesting.
Yes, so helpful when we have a little problem with UGF. So that's one of the reasons why it's in the bill. Okay, are there any other questions for Pamela before Joshua moves on? Thank you very much, Ms. Lurie. Helpful to have you. I appreciate you being online. Go ahead, Joshua.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, Joshua Banks. And on page 14, in section 24, line 17, there are changes to the repealer sections. That originally, there was two repealer sections, and it was combined to one. And the section relating to the public school trust fund is no longer repealed, and because we're not having the sections relating to the potential litigation of the school trust fund, the two repealer sections were combined into one, so that's why there's only section 24 for the repeal sections. And one change that we had discussed with the Department of Education in the first section that is being repealed, AS 142470A7, would repeal the ability for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission to employ a executive secretary, have an employee to do the investigations and the basic work for the commission. And speaking with the department on that, if we repeal that section and require the Department of Education to fulfill that role, then the Department of Education will still have to hire an employee to do that work. And so we've discussed just getting rid of that repeal section, and that way we don't have to worry about there being an additional employee under directly in the department. And this would allow the PTPC to maintain its integrity and independence.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions on that? Senator Giesel.
So for clarification, you're going to remove this repeal. Clarification, correct?
Correct. There's
thank you. I would support that.
And the last change is to version N. We are removing former sections 26 and 27 due to the fact that we don't foresee a lawsuit relating to the public school trust fund, and we've requested the Department of Law to look into this to make sure that is the case, and as well, and the Department of Law is going to analyze the whole bill to make sure that there's no other legal issues with, as Senator Begich mentioned yesterday, the Molly Hooch case, in any other of the major education court cases that have been dealt with in the past. And Madam Chair, those are some of the changes in version N of Senate Bill 96.
So are there any more questions about the CS? Senator Begich.
Just not a question, just good work, Josh, for getting a lot of those changes done so quickly.
Okay, seeing no other questions or discussion, I'll remove my objection to adopting version N as the official document. And is there any further objection? Seeing none, version N now is the document that the committee will be using for the next meeting. Is there any further discussion or before we adjourn? Okay, seeing no other business before the committee, I will let you know that our next meeting will be tomorrow, March 24th, and we will have the first hearing for SB 78, the Permanent Fund Dividend Contributions Lottery, by Senator Cliff Bishop, and under bills previously heard and scheduled, we'll also have another hearing for SB 87, and that is the School Construction Energy Efficient Standards Bill by Senator McKinnon. So for Senator McKinnon's bill, SB 87, I know that there were some changes discussed during yesterday's hearings. So if members would like to see those changes incorporated in a CS, please get them to my staff no later than 3 p.m. tomorrow. And I will let you know, we will also have online, I believe, Joshua. Can you just tell us who will be online in case there are technical questions about the Senator McKinnon's bill? Do you know who yet? We're going to have Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and who else?
Madam Chair, Joshua Banks, for the record, AEA will be online, the Department of Education.
Alaska Energy Authority.
Alaska Energy Authority. The Department of Education will have a few people either in the room or online. And the Cold Climate Housing
Research
will be online as well. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's it, but I'll certainly be sure to send out the list of individuals that will be online for questions.
Yeah, so we just want to make sure that they're available in case you have questions, in case you have any, if you're contemplating any changes you want to submit to us, that you can get your questions answered in the morning on that. So with that, we will adjourn at 8:33.